Today's show is our conversation with Alicia Keys Harris, learning designer at the Graduate School of Education at Harvard University. We begin with her biography, and then our conversation moves to considerations of our shared common life, including questions of faith, fear, and working through difficult times. You are invited to a live talkback with Alicia on Tuesday evening, October 25th at 7 p.m. Eastern. Talkback is when we widen the conversation to include you. To reserve your spot, send us an email to whatingods@ribeyemedia.com. That's whatingods, one word, at ribeye, like the steak, dash media. We will also put this address into the show notes. Or go to our website, whatingods.com, and click on the magic button there. Again, come to Talkback with Alicia on Tuesday evening, October 25th. The health of our shared common life depends on healthy conversations. And Alicia, as you will hear now, has wisdom for us. Enjoy this conversation and share it with others. We're talking today with Alicia Keys Harris. Alicia, welcome to our show and welcome to our conversation.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I know one thing about Alicia, just one thing and one thing alone. I say this to our listening community, and that is Alicia is connected to Harvard's Graduate School of Education. Alicia, tell us about your connection to Harvard's Graduate School of Education.
Thank you. We're so very close, Chris. I'm a learning designer in Harvard's Graduate School of Education. That's me at work. Immediately now, we are having the graduate school first online master's program that I'm helping the faculty like arrange their course online and, you know, just create a learning experience for these new working professionals, which is kind of like a new thing for the graduate school, that people working full-time jobs have full-time careers, their families, so on and so forth. So we have to build something for them that will help them to be successful. So that's what I do while I'm at work all day. Well, actually, I'm at work at home all day because I also live in Florida. And in my free time, I'm a mother of five. I've got three boys and two girls. And I'm also a wife to a Superman. He is a Superman, absolutely. And that's pretty much me. I spend my days doing exactly those three things.
Tell me a little bit more about being a learning designer. And my question is, does that mean you have experience and skill with the online kind of learning platforms that are used nowadays?
Yeah, I think my position is a combination of a lot of different skills that I have and have gotten over this lifetime. And the most important one that weighs with me every day that helps me, get this work done is that I've been a classroom teacher for 10 years before I started this. And my absolute favorite part, I love the children, love them. My absolute favorite part of teaching is that I would make these lesson plans and they would be like exquisite. They'd be dynamic. And come delivery time, kids are kids. So it was never exactly like I dreamed, although we did pull through most times than not. On another side of that, I've always been the teacher that helps other teachers with tech. If something new is out, I'm here like, listen, why don't you try this? And when things are down, I almost turned into an IT mentor, you know, in some cases or another. I know 2020 turned pretty much every classroom teacher into an online specialist. So to boost to that, I spent a couple of years getting my master's in educational technology, which includes how to arrange learning experiences online, and did that with Johns Hopkins. And that was the part that really forged my experiences together, because I've been here helping faculty as a teacher, teach with tech. And now my job here at HUGSE, at Harvard Graduate School of Education, is that I help the faculty do the very same thing, teach with technology.
That I just love it when people's stories, like what you've just shared, that there's this bringing together of different elements of experience, and that you're in a place where your gifts can be used. I think that's what gets me really interested and excited for you, that you can do that.
I think as I think about my position, the fact that I am able to do it here, well, let me rewind. Before 2020, I was teaching in the Middle East in Abu Dhabi. And I was teaching there for 4 years, got tired. I was ready to come home. And when I got the job at Harvard, they're like, come into Cambridge. I'm like, absolutely. But after being here in Florida for like a couple of years, I was like, it's going to kind of be hard to leave. So just the way that God teed up this life experience that I'm at right now is phenomenal. I couldn't have imagined any of it, really. So
I have a couple more questions for you, because that's what I do. Florida, is Florida home?
Florida is home. I was born here, raised here. I actually went to college here also. I only left to go, I lived in Detroit for a year or so, and I only left Florida to go to the Middle East. And so my husband, and at that time we had 3 children, and I was pregnant. And we went over to the Middle East, and specifically in the UAE. It was insane. Like I literally scared everybody I know when I told them I'm on my way over there, pregnant with 3 children already. And, you know, it was just no one. I was like, well, this whole world belongs to my God, so I'm not bothered, right? So they said, okay. So off we went, and we had a spectacular time. I mean, it was amazing. It was amazing.
That sounds tremendous. And I am going to take the opportunity to ask you if you can fill in a little bit of the backstory of how you got connected to Abu Dhabi. That seems really interesting to me, too.
The stories. I have so many interesting ones. I had actually taken a break from teaching. And my husband, my sister, and I had a bake shop here in St. Petersburg where I handled the sweets. And I was a scratch baker. And so the stuff is A1, great, great stuff, right? And my sister handled the salty side because we also had subs. So I was working, we had the shop, and we're going into the second year, and I was just exhausted and felt like I needed something different. And so that's when I, my best friend actually was like, I'm going to go teach in China. And I was like, interesting. And so I looked into it, and China was more friendly for single people, which she is. And here I already have a husband and 3 children. So why there was because they are very pro-family. So the choice was simple. There are a few other places. One was in the freezing cold, and the other was in the burning heat. And I was like, well, I'm already used to sweating, so let's go, right? So off to Abu Dhabi we went.
When you were in teaching in schools, what age group were you working with?
I started in high school, and when I got to Abu Dhabi, I was in middle school. And when it was time to go, I was in elementary. So you can see how that went. I had an experience of being a part of from high school all the way to middle school and then elementary school. And then here I get here back over to the States. I'm dabbling in higher ed. So I've been from every spectrum of learning now. So it's exciting. It's unbelievable, actually.
It's very exciting. I started my working career as a high school teacher, and being an educator is still part of who I am and what my gifts are that I offer. And so it's fun. It's just really fun to your enthusiasm. Like, it's just, and your energy is, it's encouraging to me. It lifts me up. Our show, I don't know how much Brandon has told you about our show. We aim to have deeper conversations about our shared common life here in the United States. We're really focused on our culture today. And we believe that conversations are deeper if we and when we can bring in theological reflection for those who are connected to God and talk about God. And I've heard you invoke God as you're talking about your life.
In all things.
Yeah, yeah. And or moral reflection. And so we are developing a series for this fall, and you are our guest for a series that's focused on reclaiming our humanity. I think many people express and experience and talk about, like, we've lost our just a basic element of humanity and how we deal with each other as a society in our culture. And so let's kind of pivot our conversations towards that, because I would love to hear your observations, reflections on a couple of questions. And but before we do that, I would love, if you can, just to help me and us understand whatever you are comfortable and want to share about your spiritual commitments. Where are you in your faith journey?
I'm 100% committed. I say, so I grew up in the church. There's something about the spirituality and energy and in the Black church that you have to be there for it. And I was there for it. And so this is a part of me. So of course you go through life just like experience in life. My mom actually is my role model in this, because for some reason she has this really, at the time, now it's okay. At the time, it was this really creepy sureness of things, you know, that things are going to be fine, despite like the whole world burning down. You know, she came with that, and it was just like, could you not, right? And so, I took that on into, like, I'd say, you know, going undergrad and studying. So I studied biology and chemistry in undergrad. So this was kind of like, it felt like a nod to me studying like the wonders of God. So that's what I did, you know, during that time. And then, you know, coupled with my mom, which you don't really learn how you get that kind of faith until you've been through those kind of fires. And so, like, here on the other side of this age range, I should say, as a full grown adult now, I've adopted that faith that she has, because if she can't do it, she has someone who does. And she, you know, she always reminded me that, you know, all the time. So in Abu Dhabi, there was only one Christian church. There was a Catholic church and also an evangelical church. And being a American, when you hear the words an evangelical church, you know, you go, I don't know. But it was a completely different thing over there, right? So I never went. I didn't go in the city that I was in, I should say. And I'm not Catholic, so I didn't go to the Catholic church. But it's funny, he placed me right next to a neighbor where we would have Bible talk whenever I was able to, between the work, the school, and the kids, that I was able to go in fellowship. So it's always some growing and learning that I do, because I like to learn everything, which, you know, probably is characteristic of me and the position that I am. So really, it's just I no longer test my faith because I have it, you know, and it's just it's more me trying to remind myself of what I already know. I spend all day trying to remind myself of what I already know. So
just that last thing you said, I mean, that to me, that is almost, and maybe it is, our life, as I say this to you as a fellow follower of Jesus, it's about remembering. Mm-hmm. It's always about remembering the grace that because the grace that holds us, because we go through life forgetting. we just forget. So you already know it. That's the walk. So I said I know one thing about you, but I actually know two things about you. And the second thing I know, reported to me by Brandon, is that you initially did not want to respond to the following question, which is, it's the question we're asking everybody. And I'll tell you why we're asking it after I ask it. The question is, what are you grieving in our shared common life? What do you feel we have lost? And when I say feel we have lost, I don't mean think, but like, what do you feel is lost? And the reason we're asking it is not to wallow in this sense of grief, sadness, loss, but the hypothesis is that when we can identify what we have lost, we're on the road to identifying what we love. And that's ultimately where we want to go in our conversations with people. So, will you answer that question?
You know, when he asked me initially and asked me, what was I grieving? And I said, you know, I had to think about it. Actually, I had to go back and define grief, you know, get really like go and find the Merriam-Webster version of what is grief? And it's the suffering of a loss. So, of course, I agree to that. I agree that that exists. And I agree that I'm aware of, like, you know, our circumstances, I should say. What am I thought about this as we came up to this very moment. And to be honest, I grieve so many things that there probably isn't a single thing that I don't. So, and I say that because there are so many, because I feel so connected to people, you know, typically, quickly, that as a follower of Christ, I feel that this is one of the biggest pains for me, is that Christianity is a noun for some people. And when it is actually a verb, and I got this because I'm over in Abu Dhabi, and the lady says to me, Jesus never asked you to be a Christian. Well, he never said that. She goes, I know, I've read. And I was like, you know what? That's a good thing. Like we've turned this into something to be instead of a way of being, instead of a way of doing, when the directions were specific to follow me. And then that would take you trying to figure out what he wants you to follow. That would take study. And that would be some of the things that people are against, you know, are not necessarily against, but they feel that it's not necessary. And as an educator myself, that hurts me to the core, because if I'm telling you, you could use these one things to survive from the word, we can have many arguments over the validity of it, how much of it is true, how much of it is a whimsical story. But at the end of the day, and I thought Brandon and I have had many conversations about that, that at the end of the day, it's good for improvement. It's good for study. It's good for where you need to go. So if in fact you're trying to make these vertical movements, you know, the word is there for you for that. And if we're not versing ourselves in it, then who are we following? Because if we're not following Christ and we're not reading what he wants us to follow, then who exactly are we following? And what is being a Christian? Why is it a thing? And why is it not a verb? Why is it not? And it's something that we have to do constantly. We have to do it every day. So I do grieve that. I grieve that Christianity is a thing as opposed to. Yeah. So I want to say that that's the biggest one. And with that, you can see how the unwillingness to learn and study is impacting everything. Politics, education, faith, everything. It's, yeah.
There's so much there to explore with you. Let me just check my understanding first. I love how you frame this as Christianity noun versus Christianity verb. And what I heard you say is grieving how Christianity can be just nouned. to make noun a verb.
I make words up all the time. You're right in line with that one.
and so when I hear that, I think Christianity as identity versus Christianity as practice.
That's it. That's it exactly. I feel like people can sit inside of a house and say that they're inside of this house, as opposed to, you know, being a part of making this house exist to continue. This is living and it's breathing. It's nothing you can sit down on. If you're sitting on your Christianity job, that essentially means to me that you're not doing the work.
Yeah. So when Christianity is a verb, when we are practicing, and let me just say parenthetically, I imagine, I don't know this to be the case, but I'm imagining we could say this about other faith practices as well, other religions practicing in their way. But keep it at Christianity for a moment. When we're practicing, what difference does that make?
All the difference in this world. Everything that you see is all the difference in this world. This God first, right? So, and if you have this relationship with God, you're talking to God, you trust God. And people are going to fail you, but those are people, right? Yeah. And so if you have evidence of God not failing you, then, but you have evidence of people doing that failing, then you should be able to separate the two, because I think a lot of the times that starts the problem. And the second one is loving your neighbor as yourself, yes, right? So we have that. And that is like everything that's wrong with everything around here. A lot of the things, the laws that we have and that exist, they are set up out of fear. And fear is a lack of trust in God. And so if you're doing things in fear, there's no possible way that you have time to love yourself and your neighbor. Because you can't do the first. You can't go on to the second one if you can't do the first. And if your laws are made out of fear, if your feelings are out of fear, lack, lost, then there's no way. There's no space for it. Because you're worried about you and yours and your family and your friends and God, then you, then everyone else.
You've gotten to the heart of something that I wasn't even thinking about, but that I do think about often, which is fear and how fear distorts our relationships and how fear stunts public conversations even. And it seems to me that a fruit of or a benefit of, not that we're proselytizing as Christians, but if we're grounded in Christianity as a verb, we're walking it, walking with Jesus, then when we go out into the public square, which is a plural public square, we've got to talk to a lot of different people. But if we're grounded in Jesus who casts out fear, then we can be a different kind of presence in public, don't you? That's my rejoinder to your statement. I'm just curious if you have a rejoinder to the rejoinder.
Yeah, brave love. Because if you're taken care of, you have the capacity to care. I think about that and how I take care of my children. Like when I'm tired and I don't have any more left, I cannot possibly play Monopoly. It's just, I can't, right? And so if my husband's like, okay, take a break, you can go take a nap, come back. And then I think about that on a me and God level, where I'm like, I don't have enough to give anyone else. But if he has everything, he and I'm asking him to give me enough to do what I need to do, and I know that he will, I'll go about the business of doing what I asked for. Because if I know it's coming, I need to just be doing it as it's coming. So my thought.
It's interesting to me that your response to what are you grieving in our shared common life, your response was to the kind of subset of people who call themselves Christians. And I think, I find that interesting. And sometimes I think about that too. I don't frame it quite the way you do, but I could, because it's a powerful way to frame it. And I guess the larger response is there are divisions, and there always have been. Like, if you think of the history of Christianity, it's not like once upon a time they were all one happy band, or maybe in the time of the apostles, but even then not. So it's not like there's this golden age where all the Christians were happy together. That has never existed. That having been said, it just feels like, man, it is a grievous thing how disconnected, fragmented, at war with itself is Christianity in the United States.
That is. I mean,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think it would make all the difference. Because if we're here to change the world, this is the only way to do it, is by doing something different. I get a lot of talk about, you know, especially spending time in the UAE and them listening and studying from their Prophet Muhammad. And we say how different it is that here's Jesus, and he doesn't come with a gajillion laws and rules and stuff that's hard to remember, hard to follow, but some really core things that if you can get these things right, we can all have, there's enough for all of us. That at the end of the day, there's enough for all of us. So I think that's a fear that still exists in people, that there isn't enough.
Brandon, I would love to hear your good listening skills responding to what you've heard and what you want to add.
Well, I've told you that this is Alashia is a person who, for me, has been sort of a spiritual mentor, if you will. We do occasionally find ourselves talking more about personal items than about work, and she's someone that I trust and seek counsel from. And you also know that that I told you, because you've referenced it already, that she didn't really want to answer the question about grief because she feels like there needs to be hope in the place of grief. So maybe the place that I want to take this next is to ask her that question, which is what is the other side of the question that Chris asked you, which is if you're grieving that Christianity is more of a noun than a verb, that it is less about practice, what gives you hope in this world right now, particularly in our shared common life in the United States at this point? So I want to hear from you about the hope that you so cherish.
It's funny because somehow I remember this conversation we might have had a couple of years ago, Brendan and I can't remember all of the words, but at the meat of it, my response was, when you meet someone who follows Jesus, you know them. You know what I mean? It's not the same as meeting a Christian. It's not the same thing. Not to say that these are totally different terms, but I mean, for all the intents and purposes, that someone says that they're a Christian and does not follow any principles, and you meet someone who does. So I am hopeful that we're having these discussions. I'm hopeful because there's still a you, a me, and there is still plenty of love here. It's still here. Like the bad is bad, but the love still does exist. And I believe that everyone will be paired with somebody in their life, paired or maybe more than just one other person, that will be able to minister to their heart about the truth of love and fearlessness in God. And I can't ever give up on that. So I think that is the most exciting thing, that when I meet another like person that is, you know, full of love and with enough of it to give, I think like it gives me hope. End of the day.
I think that I really appreciate that. It gives me a lot of hope too. And I think one of the reasons that I thought you would be a great sort of initial guest on this series is because, just to be sort of blunt about it, I think you and I do have some spiritual disagreements. We don't align on everything. And I wonder, despite our spiritual disagreements about maybe the nature of God or God's caring for the world, I know we've spoken about some of these things, yet you still recognize something that gives you hope in our connection. And I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit about that, because that, I think, also is the heart of what we are doing in this project and podcast, which is we can be different and we can have different beliefs about things and still feel what you call love and hope. And I hope that maybe you can talk a little bit about that for a minute too.
I don't know if I am such a pro at being in conversations with people who are completely diametrically opposed to everything that you believe hope and love in. So I don't know. But we come with a lot of things that are aligned. And in those common spaces, I try to find a place where we can exist and we can fellowship. And I try to do that with everybody, believers or not. That's how I could have lived in a Muslim country for 4 years and loved it and come back an even stronger Christian than when I left. So, you know, in between those things, at the end of the day, if they're talking to me, and I think I'm over in the Middle East, and this is what I'm saying, and I'm enjoying, and I have the love, and I find these common places, we exist there, we love each other there, they have to go, where did she come from? I was taught this by Jesus. So at the end of the day, I want to show them over to my teacher. You know, at the end of the day, I want to show them. I don't want to tell them about my teacher. I want to show them over so they can want to know how they also can be in this light and in this love. And so I think that's it. Like, I wouldn't run from someone that was on the far end of the spectrum, because I also love them too. But it would be a lot more work to find those common spaces in between. But I, obviously, being at Harvard, you know, I like to work. So I'll dig in and I'm going to find it, you know, them willing. I'm going to find like where we can exist and where I can show you what this faith and what this love can do for you, for your brothers, for your sisters. That's it.
So your witness to that love is what is that allows you to remain connected, remain in relationship with people with whom you disagree.
That's right. That's right. I want to say this also because, you know, people love to take and make this abusive situation, but I will say, I can't remember the verse. And this is like my mom. She knows the Bible back and forth, but she cannot tell you a single location of any of these verses that she knows. But there is a verse that is attuned to, you know, to love your enemies. But for those people that abuse you, pray for them. So that means you don't sit there in that place getting abused. That's not, I felt the read to me is that you then remove yourself from there and you can pray for them and be there for them. I don't think someone who is, abusive we're trying to find commonness and we can't because, you know, the pain that I'm being caused, I don't think I would say, go ahead and do that, because God has some work to do and there's nothing you can do in his absence. He has to do that work on that person first before you can come and at least, you know, be there. So, and I appropriate things. Some things that I can do, and there's some things that are behind me. And with that being said, I just remember that I am just a person. I am only me, right? And so I'm going to be flawed. I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to say things that are wrong. And I believe it that my brothers and sisters will also. And I'll have to forgive them for that should they ask for it. And even if they don't ask for it. But there is, I'm cautiously saying this because there is harm that comes in a lot of my family or friends, you know, or, you know, when this last presidency saw a lot of true colors in their family, I should say, that they didn't know existed there, and also in friends. And so I also have friends that I had to separate myself from because their feelings hurt my being as a human. So with that being said, does that mean I love them any less? No, but God will do work on their heart and I will be here. And that's what I say. I will be here.
That there's a lot of wisdom in that, because I do think of situations, and you just touched on it. I was thinking of it before you said it. There are times in our shared common life, or even in our families, which is not public, it's family, but that can be an example of the wider culture where we can't talk. Like, it does get to a point where we can't. And what I hear, the wisdom of what I hear you saying there at the end, I will be here, is that we can't talk doesn't need to be the final word. It might be the final word for now, but our time frame is longer. Like, we have a bigger view. I think there's great wisdom in that.
Yeah. We always have to remember, like, I know we love to influence people, but we're not God. So the best thing we can do is, when it's gone to a place where we can't be, we make ourselves safe, we tell them we love them, and we turn it over. That's it. That's it. We make ourselves safe and turn it over. Safety could look like miles away. Safety could look like a phone blocks. It looks different to different people, right? So whatever makes you feel safe, and when they're ready, you can be there for them.
I do wonder about, if I think about some elements in our shared common life, people who are ready to do violence, like that's alive in our culture. And I'm not sure, I confess to you that I'm not sure what we're able to do with that. Although the wisdom that you've just spoken does relate to that. Like, so I'm struggling, you know, I struggle with that. I mean, I say that just to remind us all that things are pretty tense in some quarters, right? Things are quite tense, and that's a reality out there. Now, whether that's being exaggerated by media or I don't know, but I think it's real. I do think it's real out there, and it's fraught.
It is 100%. Sorry, I have a plane over passing, but. Life is dangerous for people, for some people, some more than others. And that's a whole nother conversation, but that danger exists. It's real. And I'm not sure that the law has within it provisions for protection, but you can hear many stories where it says, until they do something, until it's too late, you know, we can't do anything, right? So, that's a woe of our world, right? That's the more healing that we have to do, because that's no way to do it.
Thank you for that. Thanks for that. Brandon, did you have anything more? Because there's one thing that I have failed to ask Alicia that I must do before we're done. But do you have anything more?
I don't think so. I'm feeling really good about this conversation. You go ahead, and I suppose if there really is something that speaks to me at the end, I'll still ask it.
Well, Alicia, what I would be remiss, it would be an abomination if I did not ask you about your children. You've got five. I would love to, if you would just tell us about them.
Oh, yeah. I have to start with the Superman first, though.
Okay.
Kind of start with the Superman. My husband is, his name is Ezekiel. Pastor kid, so you know it's been a wild ride. I think we're now married 16 years. This December will be 16 years. And so our first child was a girl, Addison. She's now 14. She's at a STEM high school doing like dual enrollment. The kid is just amazing. She's kind, except for to her brothers and sisters, but to everyone else, she's kind, she's loving. She is just, she has boundaries. Like, I'm living the life that I wanted to have in my children. They are like the best versions of me, you know, and I enjoy that. So this is Addie, she's 14. Then I have a 12-year-old boy, Aiden, and I remember my husband going, okay, you said you want a boy. And boy, I wasn't prepared. So, this one, he's wonderful. He's into videography. He games. He's just a great kid. Very sensitive, very loving. And then I have a superstar diva that's much like me. She's 9 years old. Her name's Ailey. She's got sass and fun, love. We call her Love and Sunshine. That is her. She is just so wise. So for some reason, everywhere she goes, people gives her things. She literally just scored a huge slinky at five and below. So she's just, everyone loves her. And then my two boys, they are 5 years old. Ezekiel Jr. and Elijah. They were a triplet set. We lost their brother and they were delivered early. And they spent 2 years in NICU. 2 years, listen to me. 2 months in NICU. And they came home before they were due to be born. We enjoyed I enjoyed being pregnant and having them overseas. So they have a great story because they were born over there. My kids go, well, are they Muslim? They were born there. So I guess that's just, and I'm like, sir, no, they're not. They're not Muslim. They're Christian because they are mine. Okay. So they're 5 years old. They are autistic. They just started kindergarten, and I thought they were going to, like, burn the whole building down, but I'm here to report it is still standing. They get great reports every day for being helpful and loving, and I really like those kids, you know? These kids, I like them. you know you have to love them, but I also like them. They're a lot of fun. Thanks for asking. I love talking about those little monsters.
It makes my heart fill to hear you talk about your children. I love children and to listen to you speak about them. I know you are an amazing mom, married to Ezekiel, who is, what did you say, Superman?
He is a Superman. He absolutely is. I couldn't have had a better mate. I wanted 12 kids. But he was like, friends, this is absolutely not happening. So I got him down to a manageable number. Now that I'm here at five, the factory's closed. I'm absolutely never doing this again. I want to enjoy them. And so that means that I can't have any more. So I will find myself around some children that I can love. And I think I mixed it up. I tried to have them and bring them home. And I should have just kept them at school. So I think I understand how it's supposed to be now. And I will find a school full of children to love and not bring any home, because goodness knows five's enough.
We've been talking with Alishia Keys Harris. She is a learning designer at Harvard's Graduate School of Education. I will get there at some point. I'll be able to say that correctly at some point along the way. Alishia, wow, what a gift this last 50 minutes has been, and I'm just so grateful that you agreed to come on and have a conversation with us. I think you really have just honed in on the heart of something that is really crucial in our shared common life.
Keep doing this good work. Keep asking these questions. Keep doing this good work. I'm so grateful to have had this opportunity. You've got a new fan, so very nice.
Good. Go on to give us a review or something, or a 5 stars, one of those beautiful 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, so we can get the algorithms to be friendly to us.
Done.
All right, there it is. Another show done. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
If you like what you hear, consider supporting us on Patreon. Really, take a minute and consider what is good and valuable, and if what we're doing in these conversations aligns with your vision of what we need more of in our shared common life, then take the step. Take the step to become a supporter of our mission and vision through Patreon. Or if you prefer, just make a one-time contribution through Venmo or PayPal. On both, we are at Ribeye Media, one word, RibeyeMedia. And finally, come meet and talk with Ali Shia at our talkback on Tuesday, October 25th at 7 p.m. Eastern.